Good morning, everybody. Welcome to IT Live, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Texas Homer. That's Paul Wadlington. This is the Tuesday show. We are going to talk about the fun world of tampering, the latest lawsuit as well, portal devastation amongst the lower ranks, and then we're going to go through some Phil Steele rankings, kind of talk through that, where we agree and where we disagree. Paul, what would you like to open with?
How about we talk about this tampering nonsense?
Okay, let's do it.
The flashy, likely cocaine trafficking, soon to face RICO charges, Miami Hurricanes.
Yeah, this doesn't sound like
I've been tampering with the salt of the earth, Connor.
I know.
The good people of Wisconsin.
That's true. So Wisconsin sues Miami. Wisconsin has a revenue sharing deal with a player, Lucas. It's not an NIL collective deal, so that's what matters here. I believe. Let me make sure. And it's NIL collective complained. Yeah. So they were part of the suit, but it's a revenue share contract. And so it was a DB that left in January to compete at Miami. So they would not allow Lucas to put his name in the portal because of his deal. So Lucas unenrolled in Miami. Are unenrolled in Wisconsin and then enrolled in Miami. And so he was able to join Miami through a loophole by enrolling at the school without ever having to go into the portal. No, that's an interesting piece of this too.
This is, yeah. So this is already stupid. Okay. I mean, this is great.
Apparently there's
great illustration of what's going on right now.
Yeah. So apparently there's some way to beat this. And Wisconsin alleges it was intentional interference that was not justified or privileged. So yeah, that's the big thing. They're not suing the athlete, but they are suing Miami.
So he didn't do the equivalent of his TPS report in the portal, and he just applied to the school like any other student.
Correct.
What in the mind of Wisconsin makes the portal magical that imbues you with rights? Or
that's what I think. I think it was just that's the structure. That this is all of college football for 100 years is there's people just follow the rules willingly,
right?
You know, and it's like if you challenge it in any way, shape, or form, it crumbles immediately.
Well, like Diego Pavia is like, hey, I want to come back. NCAA is like, no, you can't. And he's like, yeah, I can. This is Sherman Antitrust. And they go to a court, and the court's like, yeah, this is Sherman Antitrust. Who are you? Yep. Who are you, NCAA?
Well, and the Big Ten also joined and backed up.
All right.
So this is really interesting. And it's based on the June 6th settlement passing. So they think they have solid ground here. Tricky part is, and I didn't get this. This was my original thought. I was watching Smoke on their 365 channel. And he had some people on. And he was saying, man, this sounds like an employee. You know, if you're saying, hey, you can't leave, do this contract thing. So this might have these cascading effects, but I know you'll have some good thoughts on this, Paul. What are you thinking when you first see this lawsuit?
It's part and parcel of what we're dealing with now, right? I don't see how Wisconsin's going to be successful, but I wonder if there's a different end game of, you know, making people who come in and tamper famous, or it's trying to create some hesitation. I mean, often with courts, you won't get a speedy ruling, right?
Right.
So what if they can hold him out, right? What if they can prevent him from playing games, right? And so the idea is that fear of deterrence could affect some of your decision-making as well. Is that a possibility?
I don't know if there's a possibility on like a stay, you know, to force him like to not play this year. That's the tricky part is, do these things have any teeth, right? Because if I were to write a contract in any other setting, I would have to follow it, right? Unless there was some type of breach or I had an incredible lawyer that put bomb language in there and I was able to sneak out of it. So that's the question, is just, do these contracts mean anything? And then on the flip side, do these contracts, we know they're pay for play, but are they pay for play? And then that violates it. So it's going to be, that's where it's going to be super tricky, and it's going to have a lot of other downstream effects. And that's what we don't know.
So I would think without us being privy to the actual contract, because I bet that would solve a lot of this for us. If the contract said something like, while playing at Wisconsin, you will, then I think Wisconsin may have something. Yeah. Or they actually, I should say, they would not have something. But if it says something like, hey, you and I are two private entities, or we're a larger entity entering into an agreement with a private entity, and here's what you're going to make, and here's what you need to do in order to fulfill the contract, then I would think it has some teeth. However, if one party can just say, well, I no longer play for your team, therefore I'm not obligated, or I'm no longer enrolled at your school, and one of the preconditions of this contract being enforceable is that I be a Wisconsin student or live in the state of Wisconsin. Who knows? I mean,
well, here's something, right? A freshman last season, Lucas, withdrew from classes and enrolled academically at Miami in January, a move to skirt NCAA rules requiring athletes to enter the portal to communicate with another school. Lucas enrolled for the fall 2025 semester, but he was reclassified to spring 2025. Lucas's attorney, Darren Heitner. So I did a video with Darren 2 or 3 years on the Texas Homer channel ago.
Oh, wow.
And because he was one of the guys out front at NIL. So he did a really good job. We just talked about, he represented like the Cavender twins, a lot of those people. So he was out front. He represents people, but also he'll bring litigation against schools or whatever if they overstep. But he was really helpful for me and the audience explaining like how this works from a lawyer perspective. He's also written some books. He's been on TV. He's done. Darren Heitner was a really cool dude, and I appreciate him coming on the show. But Lucas's attorney, Darren Heitner, told Yahoo Sports in January that he planned to file an antitrust lawsuit against Wisconsin if Lucas wasn't able to complete his move to Miami. He accused Wisconsin of blatantly violating NCAA rules by not inserting Lucas's name into the portal as he requested, and questioned the legality of the NCAA's transfer portal in general. So exactly, right? You know, and it's probably going to come out that that's correct, you know, because this is a, like you said, what true rule besides we said so is there for a transfer portal, you know?
I mean, I've said it before, my local HOA has much more power than the NCAA.
Yeah.
And the NCAA purports to govern all of this, right? And you realize it's like a giant Macy's Day parade float, where you see this giant imposing thing and then you prick it with a little pin and you're like, it's made out of air.
Yeah.
It just goes
then
away.
It's on like funny videos for the rest of eternity. So this is something, the revenue share agreement, a Big Ten issued template form, binds Lucas and all players who sign to that specific school and grants that school of players non-exclusive rights to use and market their name, image, and likeness. The agreement prohibits the player's rights to be used by any other school while permitting him or her to sign outside marketing agreements, according to those familiar with the template.
Okay, interesting. So, one, a judge could say, well, you don't have a right to impose any template. Or two, they could say, you know what? The contract is enforceable. He could still go to Miami, but he can't participate in payments for his name, image, likeness, right? But how does your name, image, and likeness belong to Wisconsin in perpetuity?
Correct.
I guess, look.
There's got to be some contract length that you would think, like either probably a year minimum, but they don't say that here. But yeah, I don't think they would just let you take it forever.
Yeah, I mean, is it enforceable that they get the right to your soul, right? I mean, I don't know, man. This is so fascinating. And ultimately, I can understand. So let's talk about Texas, right? If a player wants to leave us, what's Texas going to say?
Bye.
Bye. Right? You don't want to be here. We don't want you here. And if you fell for people calling you and texting you sweet nothings about how life is so much better at school X, go. Don't let the door hit you in the ass. However, if you're Wisconsin, you're kind of feeling insecure about your place in college football right now.
For sure.
In no small part because of how things are going on the field.
Yeah. You're a coachable team. So you have a totally different – Texas can get burned by this. Texas can burn. So it's like Wisconsin's generally just kind of getting burned by this unless they're poaching up from the smaller ranks. But they get people taken from them. So I think that's why they're also hyper defensive.
Yeah, I mean, that is the food chain. And we're going to illustrate this. That's a great tie-in to what we're going to talk about in a second, which is how some of the teams that Texas is going to play, the G5 teams that are going to play –
yeah.
I've just been devastated by the portal. Arkansas, of course, also is another school that was devastated by the portal. And the thing about the portal is it's a market. It's not a clean market. It's not perfect. It's not hyper efficient, but it's a market. And markets are very useful tools for cutting through BS and opinion and conjecture. You go put something on a market, you know, I made this wood carving in my garage. It's worth $19 million. And then you put it on the market and someone on eBay offers you $1.60 for it. That's very clarifying, right? And that's what Wisconsin is finding out.
I'm trying to sell a car right now, man, and I'm finding out.
That's it. So I think that, you know, it's a giant food chain. And Wisconsin, by the way, is going to be bullying a bunch of lower FBS schools to fill their roster spots.
Right.
They're going to bully G5s to try to get their roster spots. But when it happens to them, oh, no. You know, I don't like being told where I am in the food chain.
My trick is I'd have to get more details. You know, how much has he been paid out, you know, to a certain extent?
That's the other interesting part, too, is we know right now in the recruiting cycle there are people paying for verbal commitments. No. Okay. That's incredibly stupid, but they are doing it.
Yep.
And by they, I mean, they might be in Southern California. I'm just being broad. It could be Occidental College.
Yeah, okay? For sure. I think it is.
Could be Caltech.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that said, if you pay someone $100,000 for their verbal commitment, if they give you the verbal commitment, are you done? Is your business concluded? Or are they making these people sign something before signing day saying this is part of a process of a larger series of NIL payments, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
That's, you know, can you recoup that? And by the way, trying to recoup that would be hilarious, right?
Yeah.
The player's going to be like, you know, new phone, who dis?
Yeah.
Right. So I don't know, man.
I remember like a couple cycles ago, this was like brand new NIL was on the scene and everybody was, you know, acting wild. There was one player who I won't say, he committed and decommitted to like four schools. I mean, just committing highway robbery.
Yes.
Just verbally committing, taking the money, and then just 2 weeks later. And of course the schools can't turn around. Like that episode of Cops, there was that one time where that drug dealer called the cops because someone stole his drugs. And so the cops were like, what do you expect us to do here, man? This is the same concept. You can't go and tell the NCAA, hey, we illegally paid a player and he took the money. So that's what he was taking advantage of. And he did it like four times. He easily probably made $250,000 for free just by telling Hayes Fawcett to post graphics. It was pretty sick.
Yeah. Someone is asking about Thomas Castellanos in this chat. What did he say?
I have no idea. It's probably some meme thing. All right. Lucas's, I want to read this to you, Paul. Lucas's move, though not at first, shined a more public light on the enforceability of the transfer portal. In a statement to Yahoo Sports in January, the NCAA said NCAA rules do not prevent a student athlete from unenrolling from an institution, enrolling at a new institution, and competing immediately. An unexpected but jarring statement for those within the industry. So that's what I think the move here was.
Okay. Well, that's fair. I think the question is about the larger contract, which is saying Wisconsin's saying, hey, we own your NIL. You can unenroll and you can go play at Miami, but they can't pay you. You know, we own you, you know, in the marketing sense. Again, that might be the purpose of all of this, is sort of a shot across the bow. Mm-hmm. I kind of wonder about the other Big Ten members. That the Big Ten's backing this? Because I wonder if Ohio State...
Ohio State's like, yeah, don't...
Ohio State's like, well, you know, we got mixed feelings about
it. Yeah. There's some benefits too, guys. Let's not...
Yeah, come on, guys. Let's not throw out the baby with the bathwater.
Yeah. And so... But that's it. The tricky part is this, man, is we're... The reason why college football can't be solved in a traditional sense is because there's no draft. As soon as you allow player, the draft is what allows the NFL to hold everything together. Because you have a player, he can't go anywhere else. That's his contract. By the nature of recruiting, this movement style is what makes this not solvable. So you're going to have like year contracts and stuff like that. But when teams can just amass talent however they want, that's why the NFL model works, is because you're guaranteed to a contract for X years. And it's just not possible to do that in college football with its structure.
Yeah, and you can't collective. Can you collectively bargain with someone that's not an employee? I guess you could, right? You'd have to agree collectively. Because here's the thing. Everyone's like, well, just make the players employees. The players may not want to be employees. They kind of like what's going on right now.
Well, you can kind of do it like SAG, right? Like the film stuff. Those are freelancers, and they have a union, and they're able to collectively bargain. So it would be something like kind of a model like that, like the Hollywood models, because those people aren't employees.
Further reinforcing the idea that it's all sports entertainment, right?
Yeah, but that would have to be the structure, because there's really no other way to solve this, because there's going to be so many individualized instances. It's going to overwhelm the court. Or one kind of goofy one is going to set incredible precedent, you know? And that's what this has potential to do. But like we said, this feels like an employee, you know, hey, we signed a contract. You can't just go somewhere else. You know, I don't know how that works with freelancers. You know, if like someone's signed up to, you know, do construction on your house, you know, how that works, but that's the interesting part. What do you think the downside to employment is?
The downside for the schools, that's obvious, right? I mean, if you're UCLA, you might have OSHA show up at your practice, right? Yeah. For the players, I just think it's any limitation of your movement. I mean, right now they don't have contracts. They can leave anytime they want. They can do anything they want.
Apparently.
So yeah, I mean, you could just do things, as they say.
Yeah.
So I think if you're a lower to mid tier player, you kind of want the protection of contracts.
Correct.
But if you're the top of the game, which frankly, you are the people that make the money in the sport, you don't want any limitations at all.
Well, they have that tension in the NFL as well.
Of course.
You know, where like the top players don't always align with, like you said, the middle of the pack and stuff. And so that's where it is. They have that currently. Because yeah, you're right. If I'm 5-star, I'm like, this system's incredible. I can extort my school every year, jack the price up every year, and I have real leverage. If they won't pay, I have 130 different options. It's a great thing, you know? So it's that thing. I hear people are like, well, if they're employees, they can be fired. They can already get fired, dude. They find ways to get you out the door. They've like, that's the protection of your scholarship. That's waning. They might officially, they will not say like your scholarship has been revoked, but they can make it pretty uncomfortable for you.
Do you want to just recreate the conversation real quick? Connor, come in my office.
Yes, Mr. Wildington. How are
you? Hey, Connor, we've been looking at you. We're looking at our plans for the spring. We see you never playing at the University of Texas and being fourth string. And also, we don't think you're a fit here. Anything else you want to talk about, Connor?
I intend to get my degree in 4 years, and so I will be third string scout. You guys are idiots. Thank you for the free education.
Great. We renew our scholarships on a yearly basis, and yours will not be renewed.
All right. SMU. What is SMU looking like this time of year? But that's what it is. You know, people are like, they can get fired. It's like, guys, they can already get fired, you know? So it's that's the tricky part. But also on the flip side, man, this is also very silly, right? You go to Wisconsin and then now you got to start doing interesting things and get lawyers involved. Now you can go to Miami. The funniest thing is all coaches, if you ask them, you're like, is tampering a problem? They're like, yes, everyone will say it, but no one admits their side of the tampering. It's, you know, it's everyone else. So it's like, that's the interesting part. But come on, we know what goes on. We know. There's oftentimes we know mid-season who we could be looking at. I'm not talking Texas, but it's just like you can hear whispers while they're in the middle of conference play of like, hey, take a look at this guy. He might be open, because the agents will put out, you know, to all the top brands. And so it'll be like, hey, the 10 top schools, my client. I have a client that is this height, this weight, blah, 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 and you can figure it out.
I did an everyone gets a trophy segment on my podcast saying, here are the current receivers I hope we're tampering with.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Like, you know, I think we know what's up. It's a good dovetail to talking about some Texas specific stuff in a moment.
There we go. Paul nailed it. We got to talk some Academy Sports and Outdoors, guys, as I pull up the ad very quietly. Well, I don't have the ad, but I remember it, guys. 10% off for military and first responders at Academy Sports and Outdoors. That's going to be on site at your local academy, or it'll be online, guys. It's going until July 4th. Exclusions apply. Thank you guys so much for helping out our country. All right, Paul. Luckily, I've done it enough. I can remember it now. But I will. Yeah. We'll need to make sure it's handy going forward.
This is why you're an elite town.
Oh, yeah, for sure. All right, so portal devastation amongst the lower ranks.
So I want to make this, portal. Speaking of elite talents, there are elite talents at the G5 level. The problem with the modern construct of college football is that they're not going to stay there for long. And so I wanted to, because I was writing my, and I am still writing my Thinking Texas Football preview book that's coming out very soon. Stay tuned. I was looking at the G5 schools that we're going to play. We're going to play three, of course, in the non-con. Ohio State being the big marquee matchup. We've got matchups against San Jose State, Sam Houston, and UTEP. And what was amazing, Connor, is just the amount of sheer devastation just wreaked upon these rosters through the portal in the offseason. And I'll give you the first example. Actually, you know what? I'll let you pick. Do you want to go in chronological order of the three? And I can kind of detail what's going on with them.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. San Jose State. This will be the best of the three G5 teams that we play. And I can explain why when we get to some of the others. But I think that they had a real shot at winning the Mountain West if they'd returned their roster. Here's why. Last year, they were in the top 10 in college football in takeaways. They had 28. They were third in the country in interceptions, Connor, with 21. Their secondary also scored 3 defensive touchdowns. Awesome ball hawks. Okay. They had an entire intact secondary returning. Like, do you know how valuable that is at the G5 level?
It's huge at every level, but yeah, G5.
Exactly. So, not so fast. Portal window opens. They lose 3 starting defensive backs. And these guys aren't transferring out because they had legal problems or they don't like San Jose State or whatever. They're going to be starting at USC, Arizona, and SMU. That's it. So Kenny Amatololo has this great debut season, 7-6. They beat Stanford, right? They beat Oregon State. They lose a bowl game in an amazing, fun, entertaining game on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Things are going great. Vibes are great. The secondary is the strength of their team. Best part of their team. They're coming into the new season like, we're going to go win the Mountain. What? We're going to upset Boise. And then 3 Power 4 schools come in and say, thank you, thank you, thank you. And here's the problem with the G5, and this is the real irony of all this, Connor. When you demonstrate a strength at any position, it's a guaranteed weakness the next year.
Yeah, you're auditioning for the bigger programs.
And because you're G5, okay, you know, Texas loses Jonte Cook. Oh, no. You know, DeAndre Moore has to get more catches. Oh, poor us. That's not a thing in the G5.
Development cycles. It's all about the cycle.
That's right. And so now San Jose State went from arguably the best secondary in the entire group of 5. I would argue that they did have the best secondary. To now, this is a team weakness. Because the 3 guys are going to start in their place were backups. They're just backups. So that's San Jose State. Any questions? Any thoughts?
Well, I know they lost 2 good receivers.
That's to normal matriculation.
Yeah, but that's a big thing because Joe did an interview with their head coach.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, I got to say, yeah, he really impressed me. And he had a reputation at Navy as like a great guy, like a great developer of young men who actually thinks about stuff beyond wins and losses.
Yeah.
And he said, look, we're going to get rated. I view it for the opportunity for the young man that he gets to go up the ladder of opportunity. And I enabled that guy to you know, might change his life because we coached him up well. We got him noticed.
Yeah. He was incredibly thoughtful. He had a very sober analysis.
Yep.
He didn't seem bitter. Because a lot of coaches, when you talk about the portal, they're like, yep. You
know? I would be bitter.
Yeah.
Like, you went out, you identified these guys. They were 2 stars. you realize, oh, no, wait, this guy's actually good. He just needs to put on weight. Oh, no, this guy just has bad technique. Or this guy's playing the wrong position. We're going to move him to corner. He's not a receiver.
Give him 3 years.
You develop him. You feed him. You house him. The guy levels up, shows it on film. The minute he did that, you know that he's gone, and you now have to start a guy who's not ready.
Well, it's to me, it's like it's baseball, man. It's, you know, single A, double A, triple A. And yep. Like, as soon as you have a star player, you're like, great, we won't have him next year. But it's a farm league now. It's a developmental league.
It is. The difference, though, is as a double A manager, your incentive is not your wins and losses. Your incentive is the development of the players, and you work for the larger organization, right? True. Ken Niumatiolo does not work for USC.
Yeah, he has to win.
He's got a job.
Yeah.
So it's just a tough deal, man. And my heart goes out to him. Now, I do think Niumatiolo has a good point in that we could bemoan this for the programs, but for the individual player, this is wonderful.
Yeah.
So I do think you have to address things not only from what's good for the group or the organization, but also it's really good that the individual can go from Incarnate Word to Washington State to winning the Heisman at Miami and being a multimillionaire. Cam Ward.
Yeah. Can you hear that lawnmower outside?
No.
Good, because I sure can.
Would you like,
to do it? Yeah, they do it Tuesday mornings right next to my window. They know my schedule, and I know there.
You got to read Mr. 512's comment in the chat. It's awesome.
It's like making your wife go to the gym, and once she gets fine, she leaves you for another muscular guy. Yeah. Yeah. But his analysis, that's what I was saying. It was not bitter. You know, and I think maybe that's the mindset you have to take to not go insane.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's like, go check out the interview Joe did with him. You'll really like him. He also, I don't think he thinks they're going to beat Texas. He was just a very like honest guy. And I really appreciated that. I have a lot of respect for him after that.
I do too. Good guy. And talk about the cutthroat nature of college football and, you know, the service academy is talking about developing young men and, the guy won 109 games at Navy. He went 10-5 against Army.
Yeah.
Hit a rough patch of water, and they fired him.
But why I liked is, you know, he went from, you know, kind of option-y academy-style football, right? And then he goes to San Jose, and he's not doing that. So, the adaptability, too, is really cool. That to me, is, like, interesting how he's like, yeah, that's what we did at Navy, but we're not tied to a system.
No, he's a football coach.
Yeah. And so, yeah.
Hey, for bonus points and my undying respect, do you know the name of the San Jose State offense? Don't Google it. You Googling. All right.
I'm going to pretend like I'm thinking really deep, but I have no idea.
It's called the Spread and Shred.
Oh, cool.
And what's crazy, so I was scouting them, and it's wild. So it's a combination of the spread, like air raid stuff, with old school circa 1988 run and shoot stuff.
That's cool. Like
little weird half rolls in the pocket, and you've got a receiver like exactly synced up with you. And then you've got a shovel pass going in the opposite direction. Like a lot of that kind of stuff. And so what's wild, and you guys will buy my book and read all of it. I get into why you actually do have to prep these guys and you have to sort of prepare because they embarrassed Boise State a little bit last year. Like just constant big plays in the passing game because Boise State pretty clearly did not prepare for them. So
see, I like that, man.
It's cool.
I like when our team has to like pay attention, you know, it's not just rolling out there and just those games don't mean much. Right. But
no.
And hopefully,
do you want another? I'm sorry.
No, I'll say hopefully it's one of those extremes, right, that we talk about that, like, we're trying to pick out a matchup or a system or something that challenges us and stress tests us in some way.
Well, tell you what, San Jose State would have been a nice little challenge for the development of our passing game, but no more. So you want to move on to the next devastation?
Sure.
UTEP or Sam Houston? Which would you prefer?
UTEP? Let's do UTEP.
All right, let's do UTEP. So UTEP went 3-9 last year. It's not good. Scotty Walden, new head coach at UTEP. He brought over 11 players from Austin Peay. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try to avoid making Austin Peay or Peay jokes in general. However, what he learned was being like in a pretty competitive FCS team, it's not the same as even bringing your players over to the FBS. I think he thought those 11 guys were going to be a big talent infusion for UTEP. And like, it's kind of went as expected. One or two of them was useful, and then the rest didn't belong at UTEP. But here's what UTEP lost. So they went 3-9. You're like, well, these guys aren't good. I mean, who cares what they lost in the portal? Connor, they have the best edge room in Conference USA.
So, oh, did they?
Yeah, they had a star freshman named Kyron Duhon. He's second on the team in sacks with 7. He was all conference. And then on the other side, they had a guy named Mo Westmoreland. He had 8 sacks, 38 pressures, best player on the team, 2-time all-conference USA selection. So guess whose edges are going to get like a decent little workout in that UTEP game, right?
Yeah.
Except guess what happened?
I bet they got poached.
I bet you're right. And yeah. You know what? Poaching isn't just P4 to the G5. It's also the food chain of the G5. Mm. There's a few teams at the very top, your Memphises, your Boise States, your Tulanes. And if you happen to share a conference with them or you happen to share tape, you're gone. And so Duhon is going to be starting for Oklahoma State this year. And Mr. Westmoreland is going to be starting for Tulane. So they lost the best room in Conference USA of edges, and they lost their best team asset, their best position asset, just like San Jose State. So not only is that bad, but it's also the opportunity cost of what you got to replace them with, right? Guess who the replacements are? And this is typical. A transfer backup from New Mexico State who didn't play last year, and a junior college guy who has 1.5 sacks last year in his entire junior college slate.
Yeah.
That's the G5 life now, unless you're maybe Memphis and you can like protect some of your guys in the portal. I don't understand like how the little guy is going to get ahead.
They're not. You're going to have some Cinderella story. And maybe it's a schematic innovation, right? That was kind of the historical nature of it. It's like, you better make up an offense quick, dude. Because that's – you can't. You get what I'm saying? Like, if you're UTEP, because you're going to get kneecapped every year.
Yep.
So I don't – but also it's like if you just change the approach of, like, these are developmental leagues, the schools are going to have to adjust how they think about their coaches too. You know, it's like – like you said, it's going to be more like, what do you expect as an AD? You can't win under those circumstances. As soon as you prove that you have winnable players, they leave. And they're trying to leave, you know?
Well, and the difference too, and people are like, well, people leave all the time. You go to the NFL if you did a good job. But the difference is that guy from G5 that went to the NFL, he went there after 5 years.
Right.
And you knew, all right, Nick Nash is a dude for us. It's year 3. He's either leaving next year or the year after. Let's go get his replacement right now and start cultivating that. That's completely different from these guys flashed last year and they're all gone.
Yeah.
They're not ready.
That's how we think. We're like, Colin Simmons is out in 2 years. We need to get this guy, you know?
Yeah. I mean, no one at Texas is like, man, I hope Colin Simmons comes back for his senior year.
Yeah.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
You don't want him to come back, actually.
Exactly.
Something went wrong.
Yeah. So it's I don't know what you do, man. And I like we're going to have to think about it differently. We're going to have to think about it differently and evaluate these coaches differently, you know? And,
yeah.
Because it's like, look, a 7-win season at that rank is really cool, you know? So it's like it's that thing, too. Because if you're in the conference with Tulane, you're in the conference with Boise State, it's like these – a lot of – P5, the top of the P5 and G5 aren't playing the same sport, but there's almost even within the G5, they aren't playing the same sport. You know?
So because I'm such a nerd, I'm sitting here watching film on UTEP. Like it matters, but I'm a dork perfectionist writing my little book. So I'm watching them play New Mexico State. They're playing the same game, same athletes. They look the same speed, same play speed. I watch them play Western Kentucky and Liberty in their conference, at the top of their conference. It's a different sport.
Yeah.
The bodies look different. Western Kentucky is moving at a different speed. They're slicker. I mean, just it's completely different. And people could say, well, that's the case in the SEC. You know?
No, when I watch Mississippi State, I'm like, they got some big dudes. They got some.
Right. I mean, I watch us play Arkansas, I'm not like, oh, look at these scrubs.
Yeah.
I'm just like, oh, we're marginally better at several spots. And over, you know, in an aggregate, we're going to win this game. Right.
Yeah.
But it's so. And plus, UTEP's already the worst. Is that the worst FBS program? If it's not, it's in the bottom five.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, as a potential.
Yeah.
I mean, there's 13 FBS programs in the state of Texas. UTEP's dead last, right?
Yeah. Remember they had that receiver a couple years ago? He immediately got poached. Was it Cowing or whatever? So it's just like, as soon as UTEP would have anyone, it's just insta-gone, dude.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, do you want to do the coup de grace, the most?
Yeah, let's do Sam Houston.
Sam Houston had a coaching change. Now, Connor, the portal is always open, as you and I have determined. It's a theoretical construct.
Don't cross this line, and you walk. That's right. You cross the line.
However, when your coach leaves, it also becomes official that the portal's open for 30 days, and that's when the G5 teams really get rated. And Sam Houston, they were basically an English coastal village, circa the age of the Vikings.
Yeah.
Someone's getting an axe through their head, and your children are getting sold. So that's what happened to poor Sam Houston. And I'm going to see if I can pull up my script here. But they went 10-3 last year. I don't think people are necessarily aware of that. It was on the strength of their defense. So they had this great D, top of their league in Conference USA. And if you read my Beating Vegas column in Inside Texas, this was a team that I was on early. And they won a bunch of money for me because people didn't catch up to them quickly. Well, Casey Keeler, he goes to Temple, and it's over. The long ships are on the horizon. There's dudes with horned helmets and battle axes standing on the deck. Can't wait to get into your village. And so the Bearcat roster got pillaged. They were basically going to return that entire defense, which would have been one of the best defenses in all of G5. Certainly the best defense in their conference. And they lose basically every starter but one guy. And all those guys have gone to North Texas. I think that's where the DC went. And they lost guys to Duke, Auburn, and Virginia Tech. So, like, pretty high-level football.
Real programs.
The guy that went to Duke, his name's Caleb Weaver. Y'all remember his name if you're, like, a broader college football fan. This is a guy who was all first-team All-Conference USA. He was a big portal deal. And Manny Diaz got him, like – Check the all ACC teams at the end of the season. You'll see Weaver's name. So they lost all these guys. They get a new coach. They've got a new system. And the entire strength of their team, this defense, is just gone. They were going to return 9 or 10 guys, and now they're returning one.
That's crazy. I didn't realize the scale of that.
If they had returned all those guys, they go 10-3 again.
Yeah.
Are they going to win 4 or 5 games this year?
Yeah. But see, this is so it's like whenever we're talking at our level, Texas's level, I'm like, man, I don't really care about contracts. But whenever you hear about this, you're like, man, like,
yes,
come on, you know, and like, and you can't even do 1 year contracts because that once again, they're going to leave at the end of that 1 year. So it's just like now we're talking like 2 year minimum contracts, you know, just to give these guys some hope, you know. Because it's, dude, even I talk about it all the time. Whenever we were playing Mississippi State, anybody like this, and I'm looking for their number one receiver, and it was like, it was Mario Craver. And I was like, man, you don't want to have a big game versus Sark. You know, Sark will be like, thank you very much. He ended up going to A&M. But that feeling, we already have it at Texas, and we're looking at, and these are SEC teams that were like, hey, man, I wonder if we could take him up off of it, you know? So it's.
Well, you spoke about farm leagues. And I talked about markets and hierarchies and how this tells you where you sit. Poor Arkansas learned something about where they sit in the hierarchy of the SEC. Yeah. 4 different SEC teams came in and took starters from Arkansas.
Yeah, we got Brad Spence.
We took Brad Spence. Ole Miss took three starters, man. Kentucky took a starter. So if you're an Arkansas fan and you're like, where do we sit in the SEC? Well, equivalent or below Kentucky is the answer.
Well, and they took OU took a slot.
Satania. They took Isaiah Satania.
Yeah, so it's like, man, yeah.
I mean, that's tough. And they also lost a guy to Michigan. Dude, they lost a guy to UCLA that they had plans for. So that's really tough. Arkansas lost seven starters. If they had returned all of those guys, Arkansas probably goes 4-4 in SEC play. Sam Pittman keeps his job. Dude might get a contract extension, right? Yeah. They're not winning six games this year.
Well, also, man, it's a sign that the players know what's up in a program.
Yeah.
And they jumped ship, you know? And so it's like, there, you got to pay attention to that too. Because, you know, Arkansas is known for kind of having like a Landon Jackson, right?
Yes.
Or like a Drew Sanders, or like, you know, like they'll have some first rounder hanging out.
A guy.
Yeah. They'll have a guy. And so it's like, it's even that now, but to see that level of talent just flee and flee to the opposition, right? And, you know, that tells you something about their faith in Pittman right now, I believe.
So Ole Miss has taken four, I think maybe five starters from Arkansas in the last 2 years. So Ole Miss is treating Arkansas like their developmental team.
Yeah.
And if you had said this 30 years ago, hey, you know what? Ole Miss is a better job than Arkansas. People would point at you and laugh. Like, what are you, Ole Miss? They don't even take football seriously. There's just like, you know, it's hot chick and they have a tailgate. Like, that's, they don't even play football. Yeah. Arkansas won a national champion. You know, like, they'll get into all that. Yeah. It's all over, man. Like, Ole Miss is SEC upper middle class.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
But that's why we need Wisconsin to land this one, all right? But they're not against my boy Darren Heitner, all right? I'll tell you that, because you got Darren Heitner on the attack now.
Hey, you know who had the
fewest? Old boy gets after him, I'll tell you that.
So in the SEC, you know what three teams had the fewest losses in the portal?
Who?
Meaningful losses.
Texas?
Texas is one. Can Georgia? You think of the other?
Georgia?
Georgia's two. The third is going to surprise you. It's not who you're about to say. It's for different reasons than Texas and Georgia.
Okay, let me see, dude. South Carolina.
Ooh, good guess. It's Vanderbilt.
Okay.
So Texas and Georgia are because if you're good and you're in their plans, you stick around.
You get paid.
Where's the upgrade?
Correct.
And the people that are being jettisoned are leaving for a reason.
Right.
Texas isn't losing guys because we wanted them to stick around. Right?
Correct.
Vanderbilt is completely different. So one, they have a decent NIL to protect their best two or three players. Beyond that, they're actually not good enough.
I was going to say, they're not power five players, right?
Generally, they're in a weird position, Connor, where it's their system and how they play. Like, Vanderbilt plays good. Vanderbilt isn't good. Mm-hmm. So you can't find the Brad Spences or the Luke Haases or any of those guys on their roster of like, we got to get that guy. And you're like, well, we would like this Diego Pavia guy. But Diego Pavia doesn't translate unless you convert to the world of Pavia. Like,
yeah.
Everything in your offense has to convert to Diego Pavia. Also, Vanderbilt's paying him like $1.2 million a year. So,
do you watch that interview with him? I know you're a big Pavia fan. He went on Bussin' with the Boys.
Yeah, he said he would bite someone's ear off to win a title.
Yeah, but he was going to go with Choate to Nevada originally. That would have been cool.
Yeah, I mean, I wish Choate would have gotten that guy. Yeah, that would have been amazing for him. But we would have been robbed of some amazing storylines from last year. But yeah, so I mean, that's the funny thing about Vanderbilt is they're not good. They just play good. And I actually get into, in my preview big book that's coming out, I kind of explain what they're doing and why, and how they're playing not just a certain style on offense and defense, which you and I really talked about ad nauseum before we played them. I don't know if you remember that, but we were like, these guys play different, like not just offense, defense, but everything. Like, They're running out the play clock on every possession. Their defense will not get out of their freaking deep zone, but then they keep blitzing guys.
But also despite themselves, because you can dink and dunk down, but they just
we're like forcing your check down.
Yeah.
And so what they're trying to do is shorten games. They're trying to take away all big plays, even from them. And like, they're basically indulging in the best metric analytic high variance game they can find.
If you're a losing team.
For inferior athletes to beat better athletes.
Yeah.
And that's how they went 6-6. That's how they kept, even the games they lost, they kept it close. Mm-hmm. And including us. So I just think it's absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, Vandy's a good one. That's why I didn't think of. I'm excited for this year. Pavia cracks me up, dude, because he's just like, he's like, we got dudes this year, man. He lists like six guys. And I'm like,
he just said Eli Stowers six times.
Exactly. So it's like, it's Stowers, but he's like, we got dudes, man.
We got Stowers. We got Eli. We got Eli Stowers.
Yeah.
We got the tight end who came up. We got myself.
Yeah. So it's, it was cracking me up on Buzz. I was like, you by definition don't have dudes. But you know, he's just like who I like hanging out with Friday night becomes a dude. All right, Paul, before we keep going. Tell him who else is a dude.
You know who's a dude? Gabe Winslow is a dude. I don't just mean like he's got masculine traits and he's a male. He's got a family, so that's verifiable. I'm talking about this is the dude, like the dude, capital D, you want to do a mortgage with. You can reach him at 832-557-1095. I screwed that up. Let me say it again. 832-557-1095. If you're driving in your car right now, make the person sitting in your passenger seat memorize that, because it's going to save your life when you buy a house, you get a mortgage, you want to work the best. That's Gabe Winslow. Go read his freaking Google reviews. The guy's got over 200 reviews of people just glowingly ranting paragraph after paragraph about how he solved all these problems for them. And he's done spectacular things for Inside Texas readers and watchers of this YouTube channel. We really thank Gabe for his support. You need to support him and, frankly, support yourself. Help yourself, because Gabe is the best at what he does in the great state of Texas. Give him a call, find out why, or go to mortgagesbygabe.com. 832-557-1095.
All right. All I got to say is Vanderbilt better strap up and lace their cleats extra tight when they play Bama. Yeah. Pavia made a shot at Bama. Bama came back. It's just, dude, the fact that Bama's able to take shot, or Vandy's able to take shots at Bama and Bama has to respond, just shows you what Pavia has done for this program.
If you beat someone for the first time in 40 years, that will make an impression. Yeah. And then a bunch of kids with like popped collars ripped down the goalposts and threw them in the Cumberland River. That was awesome.
Yeah, dude, that was awesome.
And, hey, we're getting, you know about baseball, right?
Yeah, I know about softball as well.
Have you been talking to my ex-girlfriend?
No.
Oh, okay. No, you mean, related to softball.
Yeah, related to softball.
Yeah, okay. Thank God. Yeah. Anything you've heard is not true. Yeah, let me assure you.
I wouldn't believe her anyways.
All right. Thank you, man. I appreciate it. That's just, you know, typical ex talk. Yeah. People are asking about the new baseball, baseball transfer, Tinney. I think the he's a great get. The broader question is all these guys we're bringing. And if you guys listen to the EGAT podcast a month ago, Randy Boone was trying to tell you, we're not trying to move around deck chairs on the Titanic.
Yeah.
Schloss is turning over the roster. He is trying to upgrade. So even on the Inside Texas thread, God bless y'all, there's guys like, can Gasparino play second base? No. The idea is we're trying to upgrade the player. We're going to go outside the program and get a guy who hits 360 with 13 dingers.
Yep.
And if you do that enough positions and you end up with a lineup with no holes, which is one of the secrets of really good college baseball, Texas is going to be real good. And yeah, maybe we don't have LSU money, but we're just fine with NIL. And I think you should trust Schloss. I think you should trust the pitching coach. These guys know how to construct a roster. And they are going to go out and just assiduously upgrade the entire roster.
They're very non-sentimental about it.
They are unsentimental.
And so it's like, that's going to be a big thing. We did the baseball show yesterday with Nash and Evan. And Tinney, was annoying because we knew that commitment was coming down the pipe, but we couldn't announce it. So the whole show, we're like, there's news coming. We cannot talk
about it. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So it's like, we knew it was coming down the pipe, but we're not going to blow up. You know, we weren't even going to hint. So it's like, we're not going to blow up his announcement. So we talked about the guy that committed right before, I think the shortstop. And so we talked about him, but yeah, we couldn't say that we have a catcher from Notre Dame that can hit. So it was funny having to do that show with a mystery recruit out in the wings.
One thing that's interesting about all these guys that are coming in, the hitters, they all, you know, hit for sort of the dumb average stuff of non-deep analytics, right? One thing, very few chasers. Like, these guys don't chase pitches. These guys have a pretty methodical approach at the plate. You get a lineup of nine guys like that in the college game who can all hit and all have power and can all punish you. We're about to have some at-bats on offense and some, you know, some innings on offense where it's going to take a while. And get ready and get used to that idea. But it pays off because in the college game, nothing pays off like getting to the bullpen as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
And that's what Texas is going to try to do. And then we're going to go try to get some arms on the other side. So we're not done with pitchers. Again, Schloss has a vision for this. And the vision is not taking existing assets and trying to make it work somehow. The vision is getting the best possible player for the University of Texas.
Yeah, and they won the SEC. I know we trailed off, but won the SEC with not his Clay. And so now he's making sure that he has his as well. And this is the same thing Sark did. Sark's not sentimental either. They have real conversations and get it done. And like Paul said, the art form of a good at-bat, it's one of the best things in sports, you know, when people are just battling for 12 pitches. Okay, Paul, we have a quick thing. We got a lot of juice out of the first topics. We have Steele's power poll in his preseason top 40. We're going to see how much Paul can read any of this. But Paul, feel free to ask me any questions you have as I bring this up.
Wow.
Yeah, this is wow, beautiful. So this is 2025, his power poll, right? Not his rankings. This is how good he thinks teams are. So I'll read you the top five, Paul, and you can tell
Syracuse me. Syracuse at 69.
Can you actually see that? You can read it. Good, dude.
Nice.
Nice, dude. Yeah, very good. He thinks Penn State's going to be the most powerful team, followed by Notre Dame, then Texas, Bama, and Ohio State.
That's fine. I mean, it's just moving around the same names that everyone has, right? What a beautiful graphic.
That's really gorgeous. This was not Joe Cook taking a picture of his Feel Steel guy 5 minutes before the show. This
I like how the shine of his light fixture is on the laminated.
I called Joe and I was like, Joe, do you got Steel's thing? He's like, yeah, let me take some pictures. So,
all right. Well, hey, we have limited time. Let's cut to the chase of 6 through 10. What the hell's going on?
Clemson, Georgia, Oklahoma at 8, A&M at 9, Florida at 10.
Woo, Lord. I'm not saying that about Clemson. I think we all think they're going to be good. But Georgia, I think they'll be good. Oklahoma and A&M in the top 10. And Florida at 10, I actually don't disagree with this is a power poll. Is Oklahoma the 8th best team in college football?
They're weird, man. Like, power rankings wise, maybe.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
So it's like, Florida, A&M.
I'll tell you one thing. People are always like, oh, this top 25 is preposterous. Hey, you know what? Go make a top 25 because I've had to do it before. You run out of teams real quick. You start grabbing teams and you're like, I don't feel great about this. And you're like, you know, at number 14 when you start having that feeling.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think you're making a tremendous bet on John Mateer. You're making a tremendous bet on new OC Ben Arkebuckle. Mm-hmm. And you're making a bet that their new GM system with Jim Nagy is going to revolutionize college football, right?
Mateer is complicated. So I've been watching Mateer. Also, this is how dumb I was. I watched all of their game versus Syracuse because that was not Mateer playing, by the way.
No, that was Levi something.
Yeah, something house. He looks like him, though.
Yeah.
He was playing like him and stuff like that. And I was getting through it. And at one point, I was like, Wait, that's not his number.
I just wasted 45 minutes.
Yeah, but it was a fun game. I actually ended up evaling who was the Syracuse quarterback?
McCord.
Yeah, I was like, oh, he's actually pretty good. I see why he went there, but it was funny, man. I ended up watching a ton of that game before I was like really looking, and I was like, that's not Mateer, dude. But I watched him play versus Tech, and I was not impressed. I mean, run game-wise, great. As far as quarterbacking, that dude, you know I'm insane with, like, setting your feet, right? Like, your rhythm, your timing, you're screwing up everything.
Yeah.
He almost never does his drop and hitch. I mean, he's constantly tippy-tap. And anytime it's second, third, fourth and one, he's going to run.
Yes.
Anytime it's second and long, third and long, he's going to run. They're going to spread you out. They're going to have four wide. He's rarely ever going to throw to the receiver to the field. Almost can X him out automatically. Once a game, they'll throw that. And it's just purely you're spreading guys out and he's going to run. He's a good runner, but I think it'll frustrate PK style. We've seen that a bunch, right?
Oh, God.
But it was really – it's not hard to see what's coming with him. And if you put pressure on him and don't let him dance, there's not a ton he can do. He makes some nice passes sometimes over the middle. There's a couple times a game you're like, wow, it's there. But he's so much trying to play backyard ball. It ends up being Talon Greeny.
I think that's great. A great comp. And kind of like Talon Green, he trusts his athleticism so much in the pocket that he gets sacked. He self-sacks.
Well, you saw Boise State. It's because it's like they didn't beat anybody of substance. You know, they played a few power fives, and then the two ranked teams they played, they got beat. And Boise State brought it to them.
Yeah, Boise State blitzes like mad.
Exactly. And we have the guns for that.
Yes, we do.
And so that's the thing is like.
Did you watch him play Texas Tech at all?
Yeah, that was the full game I watched.
So that. Texas Tech completely shut him down as a passer.
Yep, he ran a lot.
However, Texas Tech's defensive coordinator didn't really figure out the plot that when Washington State would go five wide on, like, I don't know, third and three.
He's running.
It's quarterback draw. And Mateer wouldn't just get 4 yards in the first down. He would go for 57.
Well, dude, like the halfback lead would kill midline option. Because he's actually not a big, like, scramble outside, sprint around guy.
No.
He hits you right in your chest. Like, they're going to run right up the middle, and they're going to spread you out. But it's incredibly see-through what they're doing. It's not hard to predict it. But he ran all over Texas Tech. But as far as playing quarterback, that was Sam Levitt. Like, it was that style of thing where it's like, look, man, you got it done. Shouts out. The NFL's not going to like what they saw.
Yeah, so the thing about Mateer that is in his benefit is he could one-man gang it. And that's where OU is right now developmentally on offense. They need that quarterback who can take over a game and be the complete nexus of the offense because they're not quite there yet at receiver. They also went and got a good running back in Jaden Ott. So he and Mateer are going to be put together a pretty good spread run game in combination. If we prepare for that, and as you said, if PK will bring the heat, because we've got a lot of guys who could bring the heat on this team, I think Mateer is a guy that we can absolutely bottle up. If PK does his thing where it's third and one and people go four wide and we play five in the box, I'm going to throw my remote to the TV screen. So
yeah.
We shall see.
Yeah, and Mateer is a fun player, but he almost is never on script. I mean, almost never.
No.
All right, quick. We'll finish with the top 25 here. We won't go through everything.
Any particular? Does Baylor kind of jump out to you at 18?
Yeah, Baylor does jump out to me at 18.
By the way, I give props to anyone who doesn't create chalk rankings. Like, that's the most annoying thing in the world is everyone just like, what were the top 25 teams last year? Well, I'm going to run it back. It's like, that's not how it works. Someone, you know, there's going to be a South Carolina, right?
Yeah.
That shocks everyone. So he's saying it's going to be Baylor, and that's got to be Sawyer Robertson, right? He's saying Sawyer Robertson's going
to
be like,
dude, he was fun a couple years ago to watch. Everyone was like, he sucks. I'm like, he does suck right now. Don't get me wrong. But that kid has had all the tools. I mean, he's a big, strong quarterback. I'd watch a Baylor game this year just to check in on him because he didn't do anything versus us, but it'd be nice to watch him now.
Hey, do you want a team for college fantasy? If any of you guys play that?
Yeah.
Louisville.
Okay.
Their wide receiver core is going to be excellent. And I think Miller Moss is going to be good with Jeff Brohm. Brohm's a good coach. To me, Brohm's a top 15 coach, top 20 coach at least. And that's going to show up in this offense. They've got guys, I'll just say they had guys that Texas was interested in. And they decided to stay at Louisville. Those guys are going to throw the ball really well. So if you want some cheap college fantasy points on the cheap, because people are not, these guys are not going to be on people's radar, go grab a bunch of Louisville receivers and even Miller Moss at quarterback. I think he's going to do well.
Remember when Louisville came out of the woodwork when NIL started and they started just like landing guys? They couldn't keep any of them, but
no,
they were, it showed their commitment, right? What do you think about, we'll only talk top 25 because y'all need to buy the book and do everything else, but Texas Tech, I feel like they're low, man. I feel like they have a chance this year.
You know, they do. They've certainly upgraded their roster. I don't think Joey McGuire inspired a ton of confidence last year with how they coached and how they played. So let's see. Let's see how they do when they've got the better cards than most of the teams they're going to play in the Big 12. Because they, I mean, Texas Tech did a phenomenal job in the portal. I know the Big 12's not on our radar as much for obvious reasons, but their D-line is going to look like, they're not going to look like a Texas Tech defensive line. They've got a bunch of guys that are NFL draft picks. It's going to look different for them. You know, Baron Morton's health will obviously be key, but I guess in the Big 12, he must like Utah. He must like some other teams a little better.
I didn't even see this one. That's Homer's. Yours induced PTSD on setting your feet. Yeah. I've been going back through and watching all the games.
Dude.
Right now I'm halfway through Georgia game one.
Homer yells at me on the videos if my feet aren't set.
Yeah. Dude, it's, I can't stress how important it is to playing quarterback. Everything's timed up with it. It's a West Coast principle that is in everything now. But cool. And make sure to go pick up Phil Steele's guide. I'll make sure to throw the link in the comment. Paul knows what it's like to write this level of football analysis and scale. It's impressive what he does. So go sure to make read. You can learn about each team. Steele does a great job. And it's always fun putting our thought process up against somebody else's because he does a good job. All right, Paul.
You also do a good job, Connor. Thank you, sir.
Same to you, Paul. Chat, you guys do a good job too. Everyone does a really good job. We have recruiting intel coming later in the afternoon, guys. Recruiting's been nuts. With the Richard Wesley commit, that was huge. We didn't see that coming. It's a fun time. And we're in some good battles too, right? Win some, lose some type situations. But as far as intrigue, guys, you'll enjoy this cycle. And we should be in line for another top five class.
Can I give the chat a tip about understanding this recruiting cycle?
Sure.
Texas is willing to pay for trench guys and edges.
Yep.
Anyone else?
We went really big at skill last year with a couple five-star receivers. So don't expect the next cycle to be two more five-star receivers generally because, yeah, you don't need to do that. But we do need offensive tackles really bad. And then, of course, DTs. You've seen what Kenny Baker's done, edge, that kind of stuff. But generally now in the how money works, if you see a bunch of five stars in one cycle, expect a developmental class next. Just like 2022 Texas O-line, that next year was a bunch of three stars, right, that we wanted to wait 3 years. So there's going to be movement like that. But that is why it's interesting. And like we said, Landon Wesley out of nowhere was super sick. All right, guys. Have a wonderful Tuesday. Peace.
Welcome.